Comedy Film Nerds.
Oh, wow, guess what, buddy? 413.
This is it.
Halfway to 826.
Yeah, we are really getting close.
A third to 1239.
Sure.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to do Ready Player One. We're going to talk about Isle of Dogs.
Ooh, you son of a bitch.
We've got some trailers we're going to talk about. You know, one of the trailers, somebody tricked Netflix into buying another shitty movie. So we'll be talking about that in the trailer section. So
did they trick them? Or is that, I mean, you've seen that, I forget that sketch that's on, I'm blanking on it now, the cartoon with the kids and the thing. I'm an idiot. This is the worst thing.
The cartoon with the kids. Yeah, I've seen that. Well, Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. There's a crime.
Yeah.
Somebody goes
missing. They solve a mystery.
There's a specter involved, and turns out no. God, this is the worst. This is what happens when we record multiple episodes. My brain, I just lose it.
It just, stuff starts to blend together. Like, we already did the spoiler episode.
South Park. Okay. South Park has an episode where they call, and somebody answers and goes, Netflix, you've been greenlit. Well, let's introduce our guest.
Let's do it. Return guest.
Return guest.
Mm-hmm. From the Daily Tech News Show.
Daily Tech News Show.
And his own podcast network and King of Patreon. Ladies and gentlemen.
Came here on his own teleporter.
Yes. Yep. We keep moving farther and farther away from his studio to make it harder.
We keep trying.
Yes.
I keep showing up.
Yes.
How does he make it here?
I know.
We deliberately have a sign saying Tom Merritt is not allowed. How does he find us, these tech guys?
Bending time and space.
Yeah.
How's everything going with your
show? Good,
Tom?
Man. Thanks for having me back. I love your digs here.
This is great. Thanks. ATC's really upgraded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're excited.
Yeah.
And next week, quick little tidbit.
What's going to happen next week, Graham?
Well, next week, we're going to do a show that's going to be on Facebook Live.
Really?
So you're going to watch us recording live.
But it's a podcast, Graham.
I know, Chris. There's these new things called video cameras.
It's weird. People like to see you record live. So I've been doing Daily Tech News Show Live for a while. And then once you start doing it, then they start getting critical. Like, no, just let us see. And then he's like, well, your hair was out of place. What was that shirt you were wearing?
Yeah. I never have to worry about this before. Yeah. I would just show up in flip-flops and a muumuu. And nobody would. It is. Yes. I think I'm pretty.
Yeah. Now curlers in your hair.
I want to look like every woman that was ever questioned on the original Hawaii 5-0. Every time they just get like the neighbor.
You have a
witness,
cigarette holder.
She'd always be like, "I don't know, my Garrett. You tell me. Somehow he ran out of here, you know." And then she'd have the muumuu on.
Yeah. There's a future there.
Yes.
So that's what's happening next week, everybody. Mm-hmm. This week, we've got some movies to discuss.
We are.
We should say this. There is a Ready Player One spoiler up that will come out in the next day or two.
Mm-hmm.
So get ready for that.
And you'll get some details. We'll go through the ending and all those things here. But we won't do that here. No spoilers
this
here.
Today is just going to be real broad strokes, guys.
Mm-hmm. So before we get started, Tom, how are things in your world? How's Daily Tech News Show? How's the podcast network? How's everything going well?
Things are going great. Daily Tech News Show doesn't have a lack of things to talk about these days.
Yes.
With Facebook and Uber having a fatal crash. So it's Facebook
Live, you know, taking all of our data.
Yeah, it's fun times over there. It's just lighthearted stuff. Yeah.
So what's it like now that you're being observed by the NSA? Does that make you...
Oh, that's been going on for years.
Yeah.
I've always operated as if the NSA could read everything I was thinking, much less writing on the internet. So.
Hello, NSA. How's everybody doing?
Welcome, you know.
Any CIA operatives listening to the show, let us know what your movie picks are.
You know, we probably have the interns, though.
They're
probably like the CIA
These guys
interns.
Aren't a threat.
Yeah, just give them the interns until Dean Haglund comes back on.
Yeah, when the Haglund. We've been flagged the first when we were just involved with them, and they're like, oh, these guys don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, give them to the NSA.
Delegated them.
Yeah.
Give them to an NSA intern.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're not a threat.
Yeah. So, all right. And then check their bank accounts. Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely not a threat.
Not a threat at all. Yeah. They're not getting any money from anyone.
Yeah. There's no
the IRS starts sending you a check because they feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, fellas, I know you're on hard times.
We saw your bank account.
Yes. This will get you through.
Do you guys know that maybe you should be running some scams?
Yeah.
We've got some great ideas.
Yeah.
This one guy.
Here's what works. So, all right. So, Ready Player One. Let's talk about it. This is a... let Tom go
first.
Let's
ask our guest what he thought. Because you and I run our yaps enough on the spoiler app.
And Tom is in the tech world. Uh-huh. So, he understands the technology. And
he lives in the Stacks and the Oasis.
Yes. Yes. And he spends most of his time in the Oasis.
Yeah. No, that's the interesting thing about this movie is a lot of the tech that was really futuristic when the book came out in 2011 just looks plausible. In 2018 in the movie.
It just looks like a couple years from now.
Yeah.
You know, VR. Yeah,
it's like, oh, that's a nicer model of the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, yes.
Right.
We read the book for another podcast I do called Sword and Laser, Science Fiction and Fantasy Book Club, back when it came out. Mm-hmm. So big fan of the book and Ernie Klein. And my wife got to see a preview before I got to see the movie. When she explained some of the changes that they made from the book to this, I thought I was going to hate it. She's like, well, it's got this kind of love story, and Spielberg changed this, and this person doesn't die, you know, this and that. It's not really unusual things that you change when you adapt a book,
right.
But there were things that I loved about the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that changed my opinion, but when I went and finally sat down and watched the movie, everything just clicked. Everything fell into place. I'm like, oh, I get why he did that. Oh, okay. Well, he paid that off. He set that up. And I really enjoyed the movie as sort of a different riff on the same story. It was Steven Spielberg saying, well, let me tell my version of Ernie Klein's story.
Which I think we've talked about it a fair amount on this show, but it always bears repeating is like, I think people need to, when people, it's not like the book. Yeah, they're two different mediums.
Yes.
It'll never be nothing will ever be the book. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, sometimes a filmmaker can really fuck it up.
Right.
You know, and you have justifiable reasons to be mad, in my opinion. But
sometimes even bring it to another level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they can take it like, wow, that was beyond my wildest dreams. But I think it's cool what you said, Tom, of it was just Spielberg going. And I haven't read the book. I'm the one guy here who hadn't read the book. So it's the one thing for me where I was like, okay, yeah, let them just make their interpretation because it's a completely different medium. And you know, you have to visualize everything, obviously, when you read the book. And this movie is so visual, you know? So in some ways, the story might be better suited for on screen because we get to go inside the Oasis and see what it looks like and see that visually what the Oasis versus the real world looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, probably one of the biggest changes was the actual challenges because in the book, you know, you've got two characters playing Joust, you know, visually.
It's an iconic part of the book.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, visually, I'm like, that's not as interesting as a giant race with the Mach 5 and, you know, the Batmobile from the 60s and, you know, going through a city with King Kong and, you know, the Jurassic Park T-Rex. So
yeah.
I totally get why that was changed. You know?
Yeah. And there's things like that are visual that you have to change to make it look better. I get that. Mm-hmm. Spielberg also made it a Spielberg story. He definitely molded the love story into being his kind of love story.
Right.
And I don't want to get spoilery, but you know, there's a message at the end that is definitely Steven's message.
Right.
I don't know that Ernie disagrees with it, but it's not the message that's in the book. Go outside, kids.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of stuff outside, so you can turn some things off. Now, you grew up in the 80s, right?
I turned 10 in 1980, so yeah.
Right.
It's teen years.
Did you have the Atari 2600?
No. My friend Jonathan Pennington did, though, and it was a love-hate relationship with Jonathan.
Fucking Pennington, man.
Yeah.
But 2600.
I saved up for a 2600 and was going to match Jonathan Pennington. Went to probably a Kmart, I don't remember exactly, and my dad said, you can take the $99 that you saved up mowing lawns and get that, or I will give you matching funds, and you can get the $200 TI-99 4A.
The Texas Instruments computer that you could actually program.
Which was a computer,
and
right?
That mm-hmm. was why his podcast was born.
Yes.
Kind of.
And I couldn't resist. I was like, mm-hmm. okay, well, it's TI mm-hmm. invaders, not space invaders, but fine. Okay,
right,
fine.
Right,
and
it had all the knockoff games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was I think Hunt the Wumpus was the one TI-specific game that only mm-hmm. they had. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I had to go over to Jonathan's house, but I played all the TI games. I played Commodore games later. Mm-hmm. I used to have a friend down the street, Donald. We would trade floppy disks, and mm-hmm. back when that's how you
that
did
was a big
the
thing.
Torrent.
Yeah, you know, before the internet, where you know the data could download back and forth, is you would trade cartridges.
Yeah.
Or floppy disks, yeah. And then you know, all of a sudden, if one got bent, your game was ruined.
Yeah.
So. You bent your floppy.
And there was the hack to use a hole punch on the floppy so that you could get twice as much data stored on it that Donald showed me. And I was like,
right.
Oh my God, that works. That's amazing. give me Pitfall now.
Yes.
Have room.
So one of the things I really liked about this movie, which I loved about the book, is like it was also... It was a futuristic story, but also a walk down memory lane. Mm-hmm. Like this was literally like Easter egg, the movie.
Yeah.
You know, all the pop culture references. Now, it wasn't limited to the 80s. We'll get more into this in the spoiler. But, you know, it was great to see Iron Giant and, you know, a lot of some stuff from the 90s. And, you know, one of the big iconic scenes is, you know, this is not a spoiler. This is about in the middle of the movie, is they changed one of the challenges from one movie to another. So instead of War Games, it's The Shining. So I think that was really...
Which came out in 80, so it's almost 70s. It's kind of very 70s feel.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. It also, we were talking about it more on the spoiler, it really feels like it was a tribute to Kubrick. Like, because one of the things that Spielberg wanted to do, like he contacted Gene Wilder. He wanted him to actually be the... what's the guy's name? Halliday. He wanted him to be Halliday. And Gene Wilder said no before he passed away. It's interesting. You know, I don't think Spielberg is used to hearing the word no, but to hear it from Gene Wilder, it must be must have been like, yeah, okay. If I'm hearing no from Gene Wilder, I've earned it.
The guy from Straight Time is telling me
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah. From Willy Wonka just told me no.
We're jumping to Chocolate River.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, too, is... I think the switch from War Games to The Shining actually is better because War Games is cool, but if you watch it now, it's pretty dated. You know, like some of it, I mean, some of the dialogue, it's very sort of hyper-referential for that moment in time, whereas The Shining... Yes, it's a movie.
Are you going to use the word timeless?
Yeah, it is a little. It is a little bit. But I mean, there's not a lot of things in there where you go, oh, that was only from the 70s or the early 80s or whatever. And you know, a guy going nuts with an axe. I mean, that is timeless.
Yeah.
That's doesn't go. Oh,
that's
people don't
do that.
That's not scary. Yeah. I'm like, no, okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
And the creepiness of it, because that's the other thing.
Being in a hotel that's that's empty.
That hotel is still there. It's the Timberline Lodge up in Portland, up outside of Portland, Oregon.
I'm sure if it's empty, it's just as creepy.
It's terrifying.
Yeah,
it's completely terrifying.
Well, and the difference is War Games is very computer oriented, right?
Yes.
So adding The Shining, I think, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way because it's horror. And you've now like stretched the genre, but I think that's one of the things Spielberg did that makes this movie more accessible. And again, if you want the book exactly, you're going to be disappointed, but it was fun to see this as something new. Like, okay, well, let's see how these characters act in a horror situation,
right,
which we didn't really get in the book.
No, not at all. It was really a mix of genres for sure.
And it's
I mean, literally War Games was about a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going crazy. So, but the thing to me, it speaks to, this was taking this story from the medium of the written page to the medium of the screen. So if you're going to take it to the silver screen, then you should have an iconic movie referenced in there, not just a video game.
Yes.
Because it visually was like fantastic, this film.
And in the book, there was a big thing about being inside movies. like it was, what do they call them, movie sinks?
Yeah.
Something like that. Something like that, where like you could actually, instead of watching movies in the future, you could actually be in them. Mm. So that was one of the, you know, one of the things, like you could just take any movie and just kind of put yourself in. So there were differences from the book, but like you, I enjoyed the movie on its own, just, you know, as a big, fun, popcorn-y type movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the world was more established in the book, but you've got more room and more pages and more time. And so you see, so it feels like some of the stuff in the movie, you're like, oh, I'd like to learn more about that or how that works. Or even like the Oasis, like... how much, like you know how you gain coin from when other players die? Like, all right, can you spend that in the real world? Like, there was, like, all the stuff was a little vague, like, as far as, like, how the Oasis kind of worked. Like what did you have to pay to use it? Like, you know, is there level grinding?
Why are these people who are living in storage containers able to afford, you know, VR headsets?
And right. Yeah, so exactly. So that was, you know, what's the accessibility of this world and things like that. So, but all that is actually in the book. It all kind of gets explained.
Yeah,
in the
Oasis
book
is even more pervasive in education and business.
Yeah,
which they
kind of
leave that out.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that, Graham. That was really interesting. Like, the Oasis was set up, it wasn't just a gaming world. It's like you used it for everything. You went to school in the Oasis. Like, you put the VR headset on, you went to a classroom. Like, it was there where it was literally every corner of your life was, the Oasis was there. Mm-hmm. So, which was really, you know, they didn't really get into that in the movie, but that was kind of like, and I really think, like, it's almost prophetic. I really think that's where, as we go to like colleges offering online classes, mm-hmm. and all these things, you wonder, like, you know, are we going to be all virtual pretty soon?
I do wonder though, if, you know, down the road when Oasis type technology becomes commonplace, if it's going to look entirely different, because there's all of these headsets that are mixed reality that allow you to see the real world around you and then mix it in a little more than virtual reality, which is like, I'm blind if I, right. other than seeing what's in the virtual world. And I wonder if this movie is going to look super dated because of that. If we're going to be like, who thought you'd actually walk around with, you know, not being able to see or something. Like, that's crazy, Dad.
Everything's going to be Google Glass where you get both.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, it's Microsoft has the HoloLens that is that, which is way better than the Google Glass now.
But so what's the Microsoft HoloLens?
It's a headset.
This is why we had Tom on.
I know. I was getting into some tech talk.
Welcome to Daily Tech News Show. It's a headset where you can just see the world. Like, I would see the room I'm in right now, but it superimposes things in your field of vision. So that's why it's way better. Google Glass just had the little thing up in the corner that you would see. Mm-hmm. This actually lets you, like, put aliens coming through the wall, but it's actually your wall. Or, you know, you can have a chessboard on the coffee table, stuff like that. It's augmented reality, if you've heard that before.
Yes.
In Android and iOS, they have that. So it's that kind of thing all built into a headset. You don't have to plug into another computer.
How close are we to the actual suits that they wore, where you actually felt like if someone touches you in the Oasis,
which was a cool thing in the movie.
Yeah, you actually feel it on the inside the suit. What did they call it? Haptic feedback or something?
That kind of haptic feedback is possible. I don't know if people have perfected it to A, where it feels real, and B, it's cost effective. But that stuff is definitely out there. And the treadmill that he uses is a real product.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because I was
Chris
just saying,
wants one.
Yeah, I kind of want one. An omnidirectional treadmill looks
really
cool.
It's a few thousand
dollars.
It's not nearly as smooth as he made it look. And you have guardrails. They like took the guardrails down for the purposes of the movie. So it looks a little more like a cage. But yeah, that's a real thing.
So now, is it used strictly for gaming, for like VR?
With like an Oculus Rift or an HTC Vive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you could actually make kind of what he has in the movie.
Chris wants to live in the Oasis.
Yeah, that's sounding more and more appealing.
It's not going
to
look nearly as good, though.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of this is you know, the world is unbounded because it can look as good as movies can make things look, which are much better than we can make games look in real life.
Right. So, but I think we're getting closer. I mean, you know, World of Warcraft, you know, we're making steps of the, you know, that's That was probably, I know you had EverQuest a while back, but World of Warcraft was really the one that put the MMORPGs kind of like into the forefront, where these companies were making millions of dollars a month just in subscriptions.
And that game is still making them millions of dollars.
Right.
You know, people talk about it like it's dead, but it's got millions of players instead of multi-millions of players, right? It's, it's crazy.
It's still doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not worried about it.
Mike Morhaime's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to get by.
So, but that's what I love about it too is like it shows you what the world looks like if you combined all of these things. You combine the online role playing, you combine like, what was it, Second Life or was the other one?
Yeah, right. The Stanford thing. Yeah.
Yeah. People would get married inside the computer. And, but if you combined all those things, and this is what the book did, like if what if every aspect of your life was inside the Oasis, and this is what it would look like if you went to school, you went to college, if you all your time was spent in there, all your and you know some your jobs,
you ran your business there, you ran your errands there, you did all
your data leaked from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You can get mugged, digitally mugged inside the Oasis. You can
lose all your coins.
Sure.
That is one thing they sort of touch on it, but they don't get into it. The fact that when you get killed, you don't die, but you lose all your stuff.
Right.
And it's just available for whoever killed you to take.
Right.
You don't see them taking it in the movie very often. They show it kind of all exploding out of you.
Right.
And in fact, at one point, one character starts to lose it slowly, which I was like, I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work.
But a slow faucet of artifacts coming out of his arm.
Yeah, exactly. But I loved being able to see it. I mean, I think that was the biggest thing as a book reader was seeing that world play out in front of me was fascinating. And I think he did a great job, in fact, making it look a little better than it's described by having just people who were in weird attire. Not everything was a reference.
Right.
There were a lot of people who were just, you know, obviously supposed to have made up their own look, while there are people who are superheroes and video game characters and book characters. And it looked like a real world in that respect.
Yeah, because everyone just kind of picked their own thing. They were like, all right, well, no, I want to be Sonic the Hedgehog. And we're like, well, no, I want to actually create my avatar from scratch.
Yeah.
And wear the Buckaroo Banzai jacket or something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So it was really a fun movie, for sure.
It's a theme park ride.
Yeah, it is.
That's it.
And
that's exactly the best way to describe it.
So, all right, next movie, go to Isle of
Isle
Dogs.
Isle of Dogs. So you guys saw it. What did you think now? This is Wes Anderson's stop motion.
Yes.
He likes, particularly with animals, is when he does his stop motion.
That's
animation.
His thing. It's only animals. Yep. It's a fox, dogs. That's it.
So cat next or
triangular ears.
Yes.
Or four legs.
That's it.
That's all he does.
And interesting, this is the longest stop motion film of all time, beating out Coraline by 2 minutes.
Thank God somebody beat Coraline.
You know what?
It's not like when rich guys make their yacht like 2 inches larger than the other rich guy.
It's exactly like, well, it doesn't need to be 2 minutes longer, but it's going to be.
Oh, your private jet seats 20 people? Mine seats 22.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
And I love to, because stop motion, 2 minutes, that's probably like another $100,000.
Right.
Oh, God. That was like another 18 months
of moving the characters. Now, this is a sentence I've never thought I would read. The movie was influenced by the work of Akira Kurosawa and Rankin Bass stop motion Christmas specials.
That's a very unique childhood.
Yes.
You watch the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and then Seven Samurai, like, on the same weekend.
Exactly. And what's so weird is, like, you read that sentence, and if you've seen the movie, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it kind of is.
Who are your favorite actors? Yeah. Toshirô Mifune and Burl Ives.
Yes.
Oh, no, Rashomon. Yeah.
It was...
looks like those samurai are certainly in for some trouble.
It was such a fun movie, too. And it was the premise of the movie is that it's near future Japan, and all the dogs have gotten sick, and they have to move them all off onto Trash Island. So they're being basically relocated there. So all the dogs are off the Isle of Japan. And part of the story is actually kind of dark. But, you know, Wes Anderson definitely doesn't shy away from, you know, it's a PG-13 for stop motion, which is, unusual. And it's also unbelievably well cast. Like, it's got a ton of stars in it. It's got everyone from Bill Murray to Bryan Cranston, Jeff Goldblum, and it really feels like they were all together doing a table read, because it feels so casual so fun, and just the way they speak, it just feels like. And this is a credit too to Wes Anderson and his writers, like Roman Coppola, and I think Jason Schwartzman also helped write it. It just feels conversational, right. like they. And turns out Jeff Goldblum actually wasn't there. He was, because of scheduling conflicts, he couldn't go to England to record his lines. But it feels like everyone was in the room together, because a lot of times with animation, it's recorded. Each character is recorded separately. So, but it feels like Wes Anderson, no, we're getting everybody but Jeff Goldblum together, and we're going to record this all as a table read. I mean, Edward Norton's in it.
Bryan Cranston.
Scarlett Johansson. And it's just a really fun movie. And but what's great about it, too.
Nomura,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, Frances McDormand. And, you know, not everyone has a ton of lines either. Like, some of the characters are only on screen for, like, a couple of scenes. But, you know, Wes Anderson, he, you know, he's made, like, 9 movies now, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, to be in a Wes Anderson movie is a, you know, you're in for something interesting and special.
Yoko Ono does a voice in this movie.
Yoko Ono even does a voice.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Assistant scientist Yoko Ono. That's amazing.
And here's the here's the crazy thing that I didn't think I was gonna like, or I didn't think it was gonna work. Like, there's a disclaimer or a card that comes up at the top of the movie saying that all the dogs barking is translated into English, so you can hear what the dogs say. But everyone else speaks in their native tongue, so all the Japanese characters speak in Japanese. Sometimes they're translated. Sometimes they're not. So sometimes you just hear Japanese speaking and you have no idea what they're saying.
That's so great. That's why Wes Anderson is such an innovative filmmaker. And we've said this before in the show, even like some of his movies like Steve Zissou or whatever that sort of missed the mark, they're still inventive. They're still interesting to watch.
There's still something interesting, yeah.
You know, and they're always fun.
And it actually gave it a little of that Godzilla feel when there wasn't the subtitle. Because that happens in the old Tohu thing sometimes where you're just like, oh, they just didn't subtitle this part. But I can tell they're angry, so it's fine, right?
Right.
Like, you get the idea.
Yeah, you can figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I can tell what the boy is saying to the dogs. Yeah. So the set design was really interesting. Like, you know, especially with a stop motion movie, you know the sets were designed and made like right, you know, physically. You know, it wasn't everything generated in a computer. You know that they were made in the... You know, the dogs were made and they were being moved slowly.
With alpaca wool.
Yeah, yes.
With actual alpaca wool.
No kidding.
Yes. So it was a movie that also visually it was very rich, too. And Wes Anderson is the kind of filmmaker, too. Like, I'm hit or miss with his movies. Like, I kind of tend to really like the ones that don't get as much heat and traction. Like, I really like Darjeeling Limited, did okay. But Grand Budapest Hotel, I really liked. Whereas,
again,
like,
how inventive was that movie?
Yeah.
I mean, very Wes Anderson. I mean, it's
yeah.
one of,
oh, yeah.
you know, it's his
you
film.
You know who it is from the media.
From start to finish.
But
yeah.
A unique way yeah. of.
Now, Moonrise Kingdom was the one that everyone liked that I also liked too. But like ones like Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore, everyone loved. And I was like, well, I like these other ones better.
You just forget Rushmore is him because it's so popular,
right.
you know, beyond.
Yeah,
beyond.
That one, huge. And so this is his second stop motion movie. He did Fantastic Mr. Fox. But what I love about Wes Anderson is that, you know, he can go from Grand Budapest Hotel to do a stop motion animation movie. You know, not a lot of filmmakers can jump mediums like that. Like this is a live action director. This is an animation director. You can't do both. You know, there's that, you know, you
there
can
are
only
laws
do one or the other.
That
yes, you can. No,
how dare you?
Yes. Don't even try. You won't be able to do it. And so, to be honest, some of the filmmakers can't make that jump. He can. So I look forward to his next film or his next stop motion film. But it was so inventive. Like, it was the kind of movie that, like, it's a Wes Anderson movie. It's a movie that only he could have made. It's the movie that, you know, has his voice from start to finish. And, you know, even, you know, there's a couple credited writers. Like I said, it's Roman Coppola and Jason Schwartzman. But you know he has final say on every line of dialogue and every shot, and it shows through for sure.
Yeah, if I had a criticism of it,
bring a kid with you.
What's that?
Did you bring a kid with you? Or saw it on your own?
No, okay. Saw it with my wife, who's a child at heart.
Yes,
and I wanted to have more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of want to watch it again now that I know what kind of movie, because it's. When I say this, you're going to think it's the wrong thing I'm saying. It's a dirty movie. Not a dirty, like, sexy movie, but, like, just filthy. Like, they're on Trash Island.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of threw me off because it's so Wes Anderson, so downplayed. The conversations are so just normal pace that I was like, oh, this is not a dog romp. This isn't Secret Life of
it's
Dogs.
It's not like, whoa, bro.
Yeah. But it's good all the same.
And the actors are so well directed. Not only do they feel conversational, like sometimes with animation, if you have a poor director or poor casting, you just go, "Oh, that's Brad Pitt's voice." That's in this animated movie. Like with them, like you know, Ed Norton, Bryan Cranston, Bill Murray, they really felt like you were watching the dog say all these lines.
Yeah.
So they really. And this is a credit to the director and the casting, where it's...
And the alpaca wool.
Yeah, and the alpaca wool.
Yeah, which was divine. Bryan Cranston brought his chief, I think was his character, onto Colbert.
Oh, really?
And it's like as big as your hand, you know, and it's just amazing because, you know, and they talk about the whole stop motion, how long it takes and everything, but those things are tiny. Really
that's
small.
Crazy. I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. I guess it would make sense that it's that small.
And yeah, mostly alpaca wool.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they're so small. The alpaca wool is too expensive, so you couldn't make a full size.
That must be it. Yeah.
The alpaca wool budget alone on this movie.
Oh, you don't want to know. You don't want to know what it's like. So, well, that's cool, though. I mean, I didn't see.
You might like. I know you don't have kids, but, you know, I think you would like this movie.
All right.
I think you would.
But it is for kids.
It's
kind of
it's a Wes Anderson movie. It's that Pixar middle where you could see it without kids and enjoy it, where it's not like it's not for kids. I mean, there's some dark parts in it for sure.
It's not for young kids either.
No, it's like, definitely it's not for young
kids. It's not
kids.
A tween movie. It's a teen and above.
Oh, all right.
It's because there are some dark themes as far as like you know, relocation camps and you know things like that. Yeah.
Mhm. And there's a death that got me very angry at first. And
yeah.
It played out.
Yes,
and
it did.
I understood, but yeah.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it. Yeah. Dog.
So, all right. Well, guess what? We got a sponsor.
Well, Christopher, this sounds exciting.
Yes. Bomb fell. And hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
You hate going shopping for clothes but still want to look good? Bombfell is an easier way for men to get better clothes, fully personalized. Every piece has been handpicked for you by your own stylist. Your stylist will email you his or her selections, and you'll have 48 hours to make any changes or cancel altogether. You're in total control. And you can you get the clothes. You got 7 days to tell them what you want and what to keep. Send the rest back. Now they have a special thing, which is called Keep More, Get More with each shipment. That means the more you keep, the more you save. Keep 4 items, 20% off. 3 items, 15% off. 2 items, 10% off. It's a very simple process, Graham. There's only 4 steps. You sign up, you set up your order, you get a preview email, and you receive your clothing. But Graham, you already know that because Bombfell already sent you some clothes. How did it go?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. Great clothes. Got a pair of slacks, a man shirt.
What and, color were the slacks?
Oh, they were jeans. I like to call them slacks.
Nice.
But they had a good process of like they got stuff, and then there was one shirt they said like it wasn't the right size. I sent it back. Very easy to deal with. Good customer service. I like the whole dance.
Very cool. So, but you know, as fans of comedy film nerds, we never let you pay full price. We always get the
deal. I insist you will not pay full price.
Yes, $25 off your first purchase. Go to bombfell.com/cfn. That's bombfell.com/cfn. So bombfell.com/CFN. Boom.
Yeah.
Get yourself some man clothes.
Man clothes. Man clothes it up.
Looking good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. This is, it's not just alpaca wool here.
No, it's the whole thing. How big was it? Was it like this big?
It fit on the palm of my hand. It's like they shrink it. That's how they ship it so cheaply.
So, and we've got some Patreon sponsors.
Oh, shit. Yep.
And Katie Bagwell is still doing her bike MS run. She hasn't chickened out. She's still going to do it.
Katie, commit it. You got a long way to go yep. and a short time to get there. You yep. know what, Katie? We're going to do what they say can't be done.
Yeah. Houston to Austin at the end of April.
Nobody's going to. I just did a Smoking the Bandit theme song, and no one's going to give me credit for that.
Yeah.
I just did lyrics from the book.
God bless Jerry Reed.
Exactly. Yes. A little shout out to Jay Reed. Come on.
Yeah.
Hold on to your ass, Fred. Anyway, Katie Bagwell. Katie Bagwell.
Help her out. So people affected by MS can live their best lives. Reach your donation page at bit.ly/KTMS150 if you can help her achieve her goal.
She's going to do what they say can't be done.
She is.
Long way to go.
Short time to get there.
Yes.
Let's go. So watch Bandit run.
Yeah. And how many movies did they make? How many Smokey the Bandits were
at
there?
At least three.
Not There's, enough.
Yeah.
Sure. The third one. Well, the second one was when they got the elephants. Yeah. And then the third one was like Buford's. T. Justice's like twin brother came down, or they did a lot of. They yeah. just like we got Jackie Gleason's not working, so we. Yeah. We
so we also have the Audacity Performing Arts Project, still also supporting Katie Bagwell. So, and if you, they are a performing arts program to bring that they bring to school communities who cannot afford their services. So, what you have to do is just go to Katie Bagwell's Bike MS page. Make a token donation to Audacity for $15, and they'll send one of their amazing shirts as a thank you. Just use their donation link, audacityperformingarts.com/donate. And it's a great cause, you know, bring performing arts to schools that can't afford it.
And help MS. Get
and help MS.
Making
the
world a better place.
Yeah.
And, you know?
You know, fans helping fans. We appreciate that. And the last one is supplyanddemandinvesting.com. Because planning for retirement should be as easy as planning your next vacation. It just takes longer. Supplyanddemandinvesting.com.
$50 a month, guys. You give us, we'll read your website on the show. And we'll sing Smokey the Bandit lyrics.
Boom.
$100 and we won't sing.
Graham, I think it's time to check out some trailers.
Oh, Chris, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to the big board here if you're watching on the YouTube. Here it is. The first one
is... House with a clock in its walls.
There's so much. What's the porn version is so obvious. All right, here we go. Full screen.
Walls?
Yeah, Tom, that's
house
it.
House with a You're clock and it's.
Hot, and it stalls?
Falls?
Huh, what?
I think you made an even better version.
All right. Do we hear this, Aaron?
Through the headphones, right? This will work great for the live stream on
this
Facebook
awesome.
Next week.
We didn't test this at all. The house with a cock in its balls. Here we go.
Nice.
There it is.
So you had to do the porn name for to get the sound to work.
Get the sound to work.
It's the password.
Oh, hello.
You'll see. Things are quite different here. The house is a very old place. There's a clock in the walls. We don't know what it does, except something horrible.
So, you've told Lewis everything?
Well, not everything. Look
around. You're perfectly safe.
Ooh.
That's safe?
As long as it's fed.
Yeah. You know, I like how they just didn't even bother trying to pretend it's not a Harry Potter movie. They even used like the Harry Potter font.
Yeah, and the chiming.
Yeah.
Harry Potter poltergeist. That's what it is.
Well, we need another Harry Potter movie, but Fantastic Beasts isn't coming out until later. What do we have? House with a clock in its walls.
Yeah, let's do that.
Also,
yeah.
Burying the lead. It's got a lot more than a clock.
Yes, it's.
That's not the
clock is not the exciting part of this house. So.
Yeah, there's like it's just magic house that does everything. Now, I'm probably the only one here at the table who has actually read this book as a kid, The House with the Clock in Its Walls. Do you remember that book?
Nope.
It has nothing to do with that trailer. It's except that there is a clock in the walls, but it's a very slow moving ghost story. Is what the actual. A book is. So this is just, all right, we're going to add monsters and magic and Harry Potter stuff and just make it, you know, a big effects driven thing.
Gotcha.
So go get
us a book that we can make a Harry Potter movie with.
Yes.
That is not a Harry Potter book.
Right. Yeah.
That's what somebody said.
House of the Clock in Its Walls. Great. Yeah. Take out the clock and speed it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to work fine. Put some magic in it. Go.
Yeah, so
here's your music and effects library.
So it makes you wonder too, like why bother with the license at all? You're making a completely different movie. It doesn't matter. So
they're clock blocking the other studios.
Yes. Yeah.
Tom Merritt, ladies and gentlemen. Clock blocking.
I told myself I wouldn't do that to you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You had to. What other choice do you have when it's standing right there?
Yeah,
what are you supposed to do?
It's low-hanging fruit.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like when you have an apple in your hand and you should mm-hmm. take a bite out of it, but a bus goes by. You got to chuck it at the bus.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
It's a bus.
It's the bus's fault.
Yeah.
For driving by when you had an apple in your hand.
Looking so easy to throw an apple
people
at.
People taking public transportation, it's ridiculous.
Big Target, there's an old person in the window you can scare.
Yeah.
You love that sound of dunk. You know what I mean?
Like, we've all been there.
And just, you know, you imagine somebody in the bus going, oh my God.
Yeah. What was that? And then the cops are called.
And the driver says, not again.
Yes.
I hate this street.
There's always that guy with a half-eaten apple. He's here every day at 3.
Oh, just leave us alone for the love of God.
Yeah. Go put a clock in the walls.
Yeah, go put a clock in the walls for the love of Christ.
So, all right, next one is The Titan.
The Titan?
The Titan.
Terminal Trailer 1. I got the wrong trailer.
So, yeah, this one looks much better.
Yeah, this is Terminal. I'll find it.
Yeah, this is The Titan. This is another Netflix movie. I don't know if they made it or acquired it. But I do know it has the same level of quality of the other Netflix movies.
The federal government has declared Los Angeles uninhabitable.
The base is 4 square miles.
All under NATO command.
To be sure, Lieutenant, we're highly classified.
Highly classified, Graham.
You are going to be the first man on Titan.
It's just an honor to have been selected, sir. Not going to let you down.
Our resources have been depleted. In 10 years... half the world's population will have starved to death. Half the planet will be uninhabitable. But there is one place that gives us hope. The largest moon of Saturn. What if Titan could become our home? You will become enhanced humans. Most of you will fail. Some people will break during the training.
You're talking forced evolution.
I'm talking survival of the species.
This is the best thing for narrative. Tell, don't show.
It's bigger than all of us.
That old trope.
Some of us will get together for a while.
Tell me everything that should be happening instead of showing it to me.
He's changing.
Yeah.
A grass whipper.
This is the whole film?
Pretty much, yeah. At least the first 3/4.
I want to finish it. I can see everything.
There is something alive inside of him.
He's a soldier. There's no going back.
I wouldn't have thought I would have got this far.
How can he possibly know what he is becoming?
If we can't control him, all of us are dead.
Looks like he never makes it to Titan.
Yeah, doesn't quite get that far. You know, Sam Worthington is that kind of movie star where you see him in a movie and you go, why is he a movie star again?
Yeah, name the, you know, remember that one, that really amazing Sam Worthington movie? See what I'm talking about? Can anyone here go, oh, remember Sam Worthington when he was in?
So you're saying he should just be Sam Inkton?
Yes.
Yeah, when's a good Sam Inkton film?
Yeah. Wasn't he in, like, he's probably, like, in one of the Terminator movies, like, yeah.
Yeah, he is, and it's not Salvation, which is not a good one.
No. Mm-mm.
There's no Sam where you're like, Sam, wow.
Was he in a TV series that wasn't half bad? That's kicking around in my head for some reason.
These pauses are answering your question.
Yeah. Especially I'm thinking, like,
wasn't he in something good?
Remember that one thing that he might have been
in? Not bad.
I vaguely see him sort of playing a guy.
No, that was someone else.
I also feel like, you know, we're saying like, oh, Sam Worthington, he really made that movie. Like, no, I've never said that either. So name another bad movie he's been in, Aaron.
Clash of the Titans.
Ah, there we go.
Good
okay.
Lord.
Oh, maybe it was the really good Clash of the Titans one where they went in after and added 3D. Was it that one?
I think so.
Oh, wow. So, anyway, that movie, well, we saw most of it already.
Right.
So, you know, you can already,
he goes
nuts
and he kills everybody and they never make it to the planet and the world does.
Yeah. And then Taylor Schilling's character gets thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Right. You know, for being married to him.
Yeah.
So.
For a minor drug offense.
Right. So, all right. So, I think the takeaway is don't go to Titan.
It's on Netflix, and we've talked about this before, but I feel like the people in the film department at Netflix and the people in the TV department never meet.
No, they don't talk to each
they
other.
They never talk to each other because it's like
there's a definitely different
their TV shows
levels
are so
of
great.
Quality control for sure. And I really feel like every studio has a kind of unwritten agreement. Like, look, we're all in this together. Only sell your shitty stuff to Netflix.
The
all
script
the stuff
will
you
never
don't
sell.
Want. Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna call Netflix.
Yeah. This Cloverfield bullshit. Give it to Netflix.
And then, like, who are the most gifted episodic writers that have ever lived?
We'll get them. Yeah.
I wonder if it has to do with Netflix insistence not to put their movies in theaters before they put it on Netflix. They insist on day and date, which Amazon is like, no, fine, we'll give it a 90-day run before we put it on Amazon.
Right.
That's fine. I wonder if that loosens up the negotiations and that keeps Netflix from getting the good movies, where it's not an issue with TV.
Still doesn't explain Death Note.
Nothing explains Death Note.
But
science cannot explain Death Note.
I think you bring up a great point, though. I've never heard that explained that way, Tom, and I think that might do it because the movies that like are compelling scripts get bought up because they know like, well, if nobody buys us, then we come to the 99, you know, the secondhand store. They're like the Ross Dress for Less of film scripts.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's that's what it feels like. That's
well,
a great
we go,
point.
We go there last.
Right.
Yeah. When we're
versus
shopping.
If you're an episodic writer, you go there first.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not like Netflix lacks the money.
They have the money.
No.
There's
not
no
the
excuse.
Issue. Yeah.
And they know they have taste. They create amazing stuff. They create amazing stuff. They pick really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But then these things that they produce, I understand if this was just made, somebody made it, it was sitting on a shelf and Netflix says, buy it. That I totally get. Just fill up our catalog, but we're going to put money into this. And
yeah,
unless they, you know what it might be? They might have some data that's like, these type of movies, we make them for $15 million. We get the streaming, you know, they get...
they do. They crunch that data. You know
I'm
they
sure
do.
I'm sure they do. Yeah. So maybe they're just like, no, guys, we don't need to...
It doesn't have to be good. People will still watch it and keep their subscription.
Yeah. Like, you know, they were happy with Bright, you know, and they made they greenlit a sequel.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, all right.
What the fuck do we know?
Yeah, all right.
We're a bunch of assholes doing a podcast.
I don't see another Cloverfield sequel coming up, though. Yeah. So occasionally the market does follow the quality. and DVD and Blu-ray, Insidious, The Last Key. I think that's probably a lie. If it did well, there will be another key.
There's another key for Insidious.
Yes. Father Figures. This was a weird comedy that kind of came and went, I think, with Owen Wilson. Never saw this one.
Never saw it either.
Yeah.
And I still won't.
No, probably not. And also we have on the site spotlight, you want to check out Neil Weekly's Weekly Film News. The new issue is up on the website. Go to comedyfilmnerds.com. Always an entertaining read. Neil not only gives you the film news, his comments and commentary are always entertaining. And also we want you guys to make sure you check out the YouTube channel. Like I said, I put all my short films up there. Hello Junkie is up there. I have Hit Clown is up there, about a hitman and a clown who switch bags and find they like the other's job better. And also Rainbow's End just went up, about three small-time crooks who capture a leprechaun and try to shake him down for his pot of gold. So I've got a little time at work. Check out the YouTube channel. We really like the subscribes, the likes, and the views. All of that helps the YouTube metrics.
And like here's a comment real quick from Robert McAnich on the YouTube. If you go to the YouTube comments, we'll read some of it. He goes, not sure I'm on board. This is about the Shape of Water video that's on our Comedy Film Nerds YouTube page. Not sure I'm on board with the cleaning lady / fishman love story, but I did enjoy Chris and Graham's explanation as to why they like the movie.
All right.
Right on. Thanks for going to the YouTube channel.
Yeah. And premiering this week, Cock Blockers. But you can't use the word cock, so they actually put the rooster on the poster.
Nice.
And just call it Blockers.
Is that the first use of an emoji in a title?
Well, the Emoji Movie.
They didn't actually. Nice. That was a missed opportunity, wasn't it? Yeah. In so many ways. Sorry.
So, I like John Cena, but I think he's starting to get trapped in this, like, we'll take any script. No, you don't have to. You don't have to.
My wife saw it last night, preview.
Mm-hmm.
She said, not as good as Game Night, but funny.
That really?
That was her okay. One-sentence review.
All right. That's fine.
All right. That's surprising from the trailer, but
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next one is A Quiet Place. This actually looks really good. This is the John Krasinski's.
Emily Blunt.
Yes. But John Krasinski, like, produced, directed, mm-hmm. cast his wife in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty much his movie, and it looks good. It also looks like one of those horror movies, too, that has a real nice build but also doesn't cheat and not show you the monsters. Like, from the trailer, it looks like you get to see shit, like, right away.
Yeah, I think I'm sure Neil will cover it for any of the horror fans listening out there.
Yes.
It'll be right in your wheelhouse.
For Ready Player One, they didn't show a trailer for A Quiet Place. Instead, they used it for the turn off your cell phone. It was actually really cleverly done, because I thought I was just watching A Quiet Place, and then instead of the font coming up with the name, it said, "You need to be quiet. Turn off your cell phone. Don't disturb the movie."
Oh, that's awesome. Right. Okay, that's
that was,
cool.
That was a good use of that.
That is a great marketing gimmick. Lean on Pete. This is the kind of movie I've been seeing a lot of trailers for in the actual movie theater. But it's a weird movie where it's like a homeless boy befriends a horse, then steals it from the owner, then they're like on the run. So the trailer is making it out to be almost like a Black Beauty type story with right. like, however, then it comes up rated R. So I don't know who this movie is for. It's 'cause it really feels like it's that kind of a tween coming of age kind of movie, you know, friendship about a boy and his horse, and then it comes up, you know, rated R. So I don't know.
That has me worried.
For. Yeah. So not for kids. And the next movie, also not for kids, Chappaquiddick.
Yeah, this is the story. I'm actually, because I'm curious to see this because the Kennedys fascinate me. And the fact that why are we doing a story on Chappaquiddick now? I don't know.
Right.
But Jason Clarke is in it.
And we all know the story, so it's an interesting timing of the film. Like, I wonder, like, how long was it in development? Why did it take so long to get made? And I don't know. I got mixed feelings about it. I don't know how good it's going to be.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it. I don't know. It's. I think it's of this slate of films, I think it's the one I will see.
Oh, not going to go Quiet Place, huh?
I'm not going to go Quiet Place, Chris. No, am I going to go crazy?
And the Cock Blockers.
I'm not going to go Cock Blockers. I'm not going to go Crazy Horse. I'm not going to go
crazy R-rated horse movie.
Horse Fight or whatever this is called.
Yeah.
On Pete? I don't know. It just really worries me.
That's the title is weird. The movie poster I don't get.
Yeah.
None of it makes sense.
No. It
you know
didn't.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Kennedy's covering up an awful thing. That I get.
That's pretty cut and dry.
pretty a certain amount of time since Ted Kennedy passed away is gone. Now it's time to tell the story. I can buy that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a young Kennedy that's trying to make his name in politics. So
isn't that always?
Yeah, we need to remind everybody his bloodline.
Yeah. Doesn't that happen every 2 years?
There's always a new Kennedy coming up.
So, all right. Well, that is our
show. That is our episode.
So, Tom, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you want the tech news, dailytechnewsshow.com is the place for that. And the other shows I do, like The Sword and Laser or Cord Killers, where we talk about cord cutting, you can find all those at tommerritt.com. Mm-hmm.
What's the last book that you covered on Sword and Laser?
We are reading We Are Legion, We Are Bob. Which is a science fiction story about a guy who ends up getting, he thinks he's cryogenically preserving himself and ends up becoming an enslaved AI instead and then makes copies of himself.
So a family film, family.
Yeah. Lean on AI.
I've got three more episodes of the FNX Comedy Experience April 6th, 13th, and 20th out at the San Bernardino Valley College. Come and check it out. The show on the 20th is not a ticketed event, but if you email me directly, I can get you in there. There's space in the theater. Some high school is coming to take out most of the theater, but so I need some adults out there. So come on out.
Yes, to watch the teenagers.
To watch the show. And it airs, if you have FNX, it is every Friday at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern.
And if you want to chaperone that show.
If you want to come out on the 20th. and if you don't know if FNX is in your area, go to fnx.org. And then all my tour dates. I'm doing a progressive comedy tour with Ron Placone from the Jimmy Dore Show. May 9th in Tempe, Arizona, May 10th in Lake Havasu, May 11th in Vegas, and May 12th in San Diego. So go to grahamelwood.com for all those dates.
Check it out. And I want to mention, too, the graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away. We are finally done the art. It is done. Boom. So now we are just doing layout. So digital rewards will be going out very soon, probably within the next couple weeks. And then we'll be doing printing, and then the physical rewards will be going out. I want to thank everyone for their patience. You guys have been great. I've been doing updates every month, and you guys have been so supportive and patient, and I really appreciate it. So almost done.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom Merritt.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate Aaron Brungardt on the ones and twos over there and the wheels of steel at the ATC World Headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.